ICANN board, and I'm here in a bootstrapping kind of role. And one of the things we're going to do today is elect a chair of this group, and I'll be delighted that I can step back and allow the group to carry on under its own steam. Can I begin by welcoming everybody to the first face-to-face meeting of the review team? And I think it might be just helpful if we just do a quick tour of the table. I think we know who we are. What I'd suggest you do is just say your name and where you live. So if we could start down at your end, Louis.
I'm Louis Lee, and I live in California, in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Hi, I'm Olivier Muron, and I live in Paris, France.
Good morning, Cheryl Langdonor, and I live northwest of Sydney.
Fabio Colasanti, and I live in Brussels, Belgium.
I live in Washington, D.C.
My name is Zhang Xinsheng, call me, is from China, Beijing.
My name is Brian Cute. I live in Washington, D.C.
I live in Wellington, New Zealand.
Warren Edelman. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Manel Ismail, and I live in Egypt.
Larry Strickling, Chicago and Washington.
For the record, we probably should know who's here in a support capacity. You've got someone helping you, Jack. You just need to identify your help.
Okay. My sister is Mr. Guo Fengkod. Also came from our ministry of one of the department here to assist me to engage some jobs in here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Guo. You're very welcome. Anyone else have some Samson assistance? James, very welcome.
Also with NTIA, Fiona Alexander, the head of our international office.
Very welcome. I'm just going to continue doing some housekeeping. I wonder if I could just explain, first of all, the audio and connectivity. And I'll begin by introducing Alice, if you haven't met Alice Jansen from our Brussels office, who's helping support this team. Alice, could I ask you to introduce the ICANN technical team who are supporting the meeting?
So today with us we have Jesse, Corey, and David from the IT review team of the Affirmation and ICANN staff.
Thank you. Seems to be a delay with the mics coming on. So thank you, and thank you, technical team. The meeting is being audio streamed. There's an Adobe room available, and presentations will be put up in that, and I'll ask the technical staff to tell us from time to time exactly how many people are listening in, if any, to the deliberations of the review team. I suppose we should just note an apology from Janis Karklins, who is a co-selector of the team. He's on his way here, having had duties in Paris. He'll be here later on this afternoon. As a matter of the meeting is being scribed, so there'll be a full audio record of the meeting. What I suggest we do, though, is if any member of the review team wants us to stop recording and go into private session, they just ask. There doesn't have to be any reason given, and we will automatically go into private session and the recording will stop. So we don't have the discussion about whether we're going to go private or not in public. We go straight into public, and then whoever it is who has the issue can explain what their issue is. What we usually then do is resolve that issue, agree what the statement as we come out of the private session will be, which would be the board met, the review team met, considered and has agreed to do something, and then we read that into the record as soon as we go back onto the public session. So there's a record of the fact that we've gone offline and then come back online. And so all you need to do if you have any issue that you want to discuss in private is just ask and we'll go into a private session. I think the other thing we've agreed is that we want to have a sort of a bullet point report made public of this session within 24 hours of it closing. So that will be largely just taking the agenda, saying these were the topics that were discussed and any sort of major conclusions. So that's not the minutes, and it's made quite clear that that's not the official minutes of the meeting. Minutes, I think we've agreed, should come out 3 or 4 or 4 or 5 days after, and that you should get a chance to review those. So the minutes will be circulated, and you can just check that the resolutions and the agreements have been properly recorded, and then they'll be posted. And in addition to that, there will be the full audio of the non-private part available. So there's the three levels of complexity, if you like, or three levels of detail. Bullet points very quickly so that people know what's been discussed, what's been decided. Formal minutes with resolutions recorded, if any, and then the full audio cast. And perhaps the most important piece of housekeeping, we're going to be going over to the ICANN offices at 5 o'clock for drinks. that gives us a good excuse to finish on time. Staff will be putting on just a very simple reception over there for us and do a brief tour of the offices for those who haven't, or even those who have. There may be parts that you haven't seen. So I suggest that with that, then we move to the agenda, and I would like to bring up item 5 first, which I think we need to clarify, the conflicts of interest policy, before we go on to the actual substance of the work. It's another one of the housekeeping things. Becky and Cheryl have helpfully circulated a couple of examples, and I wonder if we could just begin with the one that Becky circulated, and Brian has very kindly copied these and made these available. And what I'm looking for here is agreement to adopt this policy and this format, unless someone's got a better one. We have to have a policy. Becky.
By way of clarification, the way I came up with this is I went to the conflict of interest policy for ICANN board directors. I modified it to fit our arrangement, and I simplified it a little bit, but I did not intend to change the substantive standard.
And it's been circulated, and I'm going to assume, as with all things that are circulated before, have been read, and we don't need to spend a lot of time going through a clause by clause analysis of it. So there's two parts to this. There's the actual rules, if you like, which say there shall be a conflict policy and what it's for, and then there's the declaration, which is what in Becky's case she's filled out, and in the board's case the individual board members fill out. The idea of this is to disclose what your interests are so that judgments can be made as to whether there will ever be a conflict between your interests and the interests of the team. Becky.
Actually, this is one place where I procedurally changed it. What this calls for is everybody provides the certification. I presume those would be publicly available. And any member of the review team who has a concern approaches either the chair or the vice chair about anybody else's. And then that provokes a conversation.
Okay. Does anyone want to talk about the pages of the policy, the articles 1, 2, 3, drafted basically by Becky, or can we take those as substantively adopted or adoptable? Remember that if something arises at some stage and we need to go back and revisit this, we can change it. This is entirely under our control as a team. I think this is just a good way of getting started. Larry?
Well, I just would ask, before we adopt something, to which I have no objection, is would it be helpful to have a brief conversation as to how people think conflicts could arise in this context? I thought Fabio sent out a thoughtful note several days ago about whether the task we're about, whether the openness which will characterize our deliberations puts this activity into a slightly different category as the usual conflict of interest scenario, where someone may have a financial interest that is affected by the outcome of a specific decision or act of an organization. So I thought it might be useful to see exactly what concerns people have about a conflict of interest arising in the context of what we're doing here.
Sure. I think I posted my view in line in response to Fabio, so I won't elaborate on that. But anyone else want to comment? Fabio.
Summarize what I put in my email. I do not believe, first of all, I agree that we must have a policy and that there must be disclosure to the extent that we find it necessary. But I don't think that the nature of the exercise we are in is one where the risk of conflict of interest is extremely strong, because the issue of transparency, accountability, is something that is in interest of everyone, and you cannot imagine that more or less transparency or accountability might favor one group of stakeholders over another. The only issue that some critical stakeholders might have is to which extent the members of the group are more or less linked to ICANN, because one might expect that perhaps ICANN not to want as much accountability and transparency as some other parts of the internet community might want. So this is the sort of risk that I see, and I think that in a certain way it is addressed, because in your document there is the request to spell out if one has any links of this type. So this is the scope of the issue that we should be discussing. Then I also mentioned, but that you answered, that there is a separate issue that we have to agree among ourselves, and that is your peculiar role of a person making recommendation to himself. But that's another matter.
So I'll be looking for some psychological help for the schizophrenia that that follows from that. Does anyone else want to say anything in relation to that? I mean, I think there's a range of obvious conflicts with people who've got contracts with ICANN and others who haven't, and you know, I've got one. Anyone else want to say, or can we move forward? Larry, does that cover the discussion to an extent that you're happy with?
I'm not pressing anybody to speak who doesn't wish to speak, so sure, that's fine.
Okay, well, do we need a resolution then adopting this as a policy? Cheryl, would you like to be recorded as moving that?
I would be very, very pleased to move that, thank you.
And I'm looking for a second. Becky's happy to second that. Okay, so I'll put the resolution. All those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Carried. So that's the policy for now. And as I say, any time the review team wants to come back and have another look at it, they should feel free to. The next exercise is settling a disclosure form. And what I haven't done, and perhaps Cheryl can help that, is there any material difference between this, or is there something that's in both that we can agree on? Cheryl, have you had a chance to compare the forms?
I haven't actually compared the forms, but I don't think there's much material difference in them. One is simply a set of Q&A responses, and the other is more open form. I think the fact that, and I'm assuming that we're in agreement, that all of these declaration forms would indeed be in the public space, that there's not so much a problem with the pro forma mechanism we use, rather that all the necessary areas are covered.
Mm. Becky, you've had a close look in preparing. Is there anything that you could see in Cheryl's form that's missing in yours that we could, you know, cut and paste into it to make it better?
The only thing I would do is just add one central paragraph from "I certify that, except as described below, I don't have the compensation arrangement, blah, blah, blah," that's the third paragraph in the affirmation that I put forward, only because that repeats the standard that's in the conflict of interest policy. Otherwise, I find Cheryl's form much more user-friendly and informative.
So I got a bit lost. Can you just be a bit clearer about which paragraph you're putting into which document?
If you look at my affirmation.
Okay, that's the single page one.
Yeah, the single page. The third paragraph.
The third numbered paragraph or the third?
The third paragraph that appears on the page.
I hereby certify that except as described. Yep, if you put that into Cheryl's declaration, we could use Cheryl's declaration.
I think that would probably be a good idea.
Which, Becky, is exactly what I did when I sent in my declaration. It is item 7, the formal statement of commitment to the... So it would replace, in the template, my work group made an affirmation to the commitment to its policies and procedures. Here, your affirmation would go in exactly that same place.
Perfect.
So you take out your current 7 and put this 7.
Yes, and if you like, I've got the one I sent actually for this group in my format. We could just make a template out of that if that's going to be of any use.
All right, well, the suggestion is that we adopt the at-large form with paragraph 3 from the board form in it. Is anybody not following that? Okay, that would become the form then that we would sign. Happy with that? Okay, so that becomes the form. Now, at this stage, I'm not sure what further to do. Do we actually want to go through a process before we go on of actually filling those in and having a discussion about them, or can we have those done by the end of the day? I think getting a process clear has been my most important issue. I'm not so concerned about actually applying it urgently.
Yeah, during the day would be fine, I would have thought.
Okay. Can we try and have those forms sorted out? I'll get to see if staff can help do that. And if people could fill out those disclosure forms and come back to them at the end of the day. Manal.
Just for clarification, to make sure I understand right. So we are going to report all interests, even if they don't have to do with ICANN. Because, I mean, Cheryl's current position, I mean, the current vocation, employer, and position, this is what we do back home and might not have a relation with ICANN, I mean. Because this is the difference I got between Becky's form and Cheryl's form. Cheryl was stating everything she's doing in relation to ICANN and otherwise, but I thought Becky was only stating whatever in relation to ICANN.
Cheryl.
If I can just make it very clear, Manal, that particular part of what at-large users in their declarations of interest is standard procedure in all policy development process work groups in the GNSO. So in fact, the reason that lives on in our community's documents is because it was seen by at least one of the support organisations as an essential piece of information in a declaration of interest in their policy development process. So perhaps we should look at the rationale behind that before we change it too much.
Mm. My personal preference would be to start wide. I mean, the issue is to capture interests because you don't know when the conflict is going to come up. If there's an issue about that, then we can have processes for having parts of it perhaps kept confidential or something. But, Becky.
I'm sorry. All of that information is already public, by the way, because it would be in the bios that were submitted by the review team member application. So if that's a problem, we could just omit it from this, and I don't think it does any harm.
So I think the answer is yes. It's a fairly full form with quite a lot of disclosure, but no more than you've already given elsewhere.
Trying to make sure what exactly to write. I'm not objecting to either form. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's put conflict of interest aside until the forms have filled in and come to the election of the chair. And there's been some discussion organised by Yanis about that. Is there time for it? So I'm either looking for discussions about the role of chair or nominations for the position of chair. The floor is open.
I had already made some nominations during the last conference call.
Do you want to repeat what they were?
Manal, Becky, but I would gladly add Cheryl.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations or any other discussion about that?
I think having worked with Ryan, I'd be very happy to have that part of industry represented in the leadership and in the agenda setting in some way. I know that's my particular bias because I've happened to work with him in the work team, but he seems to work out all right, actually.
So there's a nomination for Brian. Can I come back to the two nominees? I think, Manal, you expressed disinterest, I think, last time. How do you feel about being nominated for either chair or vice chair?
Actually, thank you, Fabio, for the nomination. I feel there are more people who would be more capable to be chairs, but I'm certainly willing to serve as a vice chair if this is acceptable by the group.
Thank you. Becky, words about your own nomination.
I think it would be much better if I not participate as chair.
Okay. So we have a nomination for chair for Brian. Brian, well, how do you feel about serving as chair? Do you accept nomination?
I happily accept the nomination and would add that I'm prepared to make a verbal statement about my conflicts of interest if the group would require that before submitting a written statement as well, before we get to a decision.
Thank you. Let's come back to that if we get to that point. Are there any other nominations? As I'm keeping track, we seem to have a nomination for chair and a nomination for vice chair. Brian for chair and Manal for vice chair. Zhang.
For my suggestion, I will nominate Mrs. Manal for chair and Mrs. Cherry for vice chair.
If I may, my community would prefer me to be in a less administrative and more engagement role. Thank you for your nomination.
Vicky.
Make the nomination of Manal for vice chair formal. I think that Fabio was making it in a general chair role, so just to second his nomination and make it formal.
Thank you. Are there any other nominees? Any other discussion about that? In which case, we have a nomination for you, for Brian as chair. Brian, before we vote on that, you've offered an oral disclosure statement. Why don't we let you do that? Thank you.
This, of course, will be followed up with the written form that we agreed to call out the specific areas of interest. I'm certifying that I am a vice president and shareholder of Affilius Limited, which is a contracting party with ICANN to the registry operator agreement for the .info top-level domain, and to an element in Cheryl's form also that Affilius's commercial interests may be impacted by the outcomes of ICANN's vertical integration policy development process. I represent the registry stakeholders group and Affilius's interests in that PDP.
Thank you, Brian. Manal, would you like to make a disclosure as well?
Yes, thank you, Peter. I work back home at the telecom regulator, and I serve as Egypt's GAC representative within ICANN, and I've been a vice chair for one term. And currently, we are in the process of our delegation of the IDN CCTLD with ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you, Manal. Does anybody have any question of either the nominees in relation to their disclosure statements? I see none. So let's put them as a vote. Let's take the first vote in relation to the chair. All those in favour of the current nomination for Brian as chair, please say aye or raise your hand. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? It gives me great pleasure then to declare Brian the chair. And I think I'll hand over the chair to Brian to take the vote for the vice chair. But in doing that, can I perhaps just take the opportunity for one final statement? I personally regard the ending of the joint project agreement last year as one of the most significant milestones in ICANN's history. And I regard the signing and the content of the affirmation of commitments as one of the most important positive steps in ICANN's history as well. As chairman of the board, there's a great deal of board effort going into making sure that those commitments are followed. And there is, I can tell you, there's now a board committee that's been set up to look after a working group to establish to make sure that the review processes are well supported. I want to thank you all for committing to take part in what really is the most extraordinary process, the shifting of responsibility for the review of ICANN from the US Department of Commerce to the community itself is not only the correct thing, I think, but a tremendously exciting, powerful thing. So thank you for your role in the work that's to follow. Because of the obvious conflicts that Fabio's very carefully raised, I will be now stepping back and taking a much lesser role. But if there's anything I can do in the role as liaison, or getting messages through to the extent that I can, I will. So, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And thank you all for entrusting me with this responsibility. I'll take it very, very seriously. As a personal note, I have a sense already that through our first couple of calls that everyone is of a very serious mind and purpose on this team. I personally think this is the most important piece of work that's being undertaken in ICANN today and intend to approach the work in that way. Two things to start off with. I have prepared, I think, for when we get to public session, very brief opening remarks that provide my personal view of the work ahead of us. I would give you a summary of that. But first, what I thought we should talk about, because we've had some splintered conversations over the last 24 hours, there's been some juggling of the agenda and some... Oh, thank you. We have another order of business. The first order of business is the election of the vice chair. Thank you. Okay, nomination accepted. Is there a second?
Yes.
We have a second. Discussion. Can we see a show of hands and an aye for Manal as vice chair?
Aye.
Congratulations, Manal is officially named the vice chair of the working group. And I had a feeling I'd misstep at the outset anyway, but welcome, and I look forward to working with you, Manal, very closely on this work. Would you like to provide any opening comments?
I thank you all for your trust, and this is a very important thing, and I hope I'll be able to serve to the best of the community and I can and the group. Thank you.
Thank you. So with regard to the first order of business, I think, is the questions and the structure of the day and the agenda. There's been some reordering. Rod is now going to be joining us in person, but at the 11 o'clock hour. So we've had a reversal of the time slots. As proposed now, Doug Brent will join us to open the session at 10 o'clock and is intending to speak primarily to the organizational chart, the structure of ICANN, or lines of reporting. So I personally think this is a good sequence of discussion, but I would like to hear from the members of the team their views on the ordering of the questions and the ordering of the agenda. Open floor.
Mr. Chair, is the best description I think has come in from that email recently from Denise Michelle, I think, suggesting how the staff want to deal with that. And I, looking my quick look at it last night, was that seemed like a very sensible way of moving through things. If people could haul that up.
Yes. Yeah, so that the proposal is at 10 o'clock. Doug will address organizational charts, strategic and budget planning processes, and staff prioritization and performance procedures. At 11 o'clock, Rod will discuss the review goals, framework, and primary activities under review. At 12 o'clock, John, Denise, and Doug will discuss the remaining issues identified by the team. My personal view, and I'd open it for discussion, is that we have a list of questions that we provided to the staff that we've set an expectation that we would receive verbal answers to those questions. I appreciate the structuring and sequencing of the proposed agenda from staff, but feel that we should proceed as we see fit in terms of proposing the questions to any and all of the interviewees. Is there any discussion or objection to that approach? Good. With regard to the closed session. Rod, unfortunately, will be leaving and returning back to Washington, D.C., so we won't have his presence in the closed session. We will have, I assume, John, Denise, and Doug for that session. Any points of order on that session in terms of our approach, in terms of expectations, in terms of data collection?
There seemed to be some concern raised by ICANN staff as to the nature of our questions and to the fulsomeness of their responses. And it wasn't just a matter of time. It seemed to be a larger set of issues. Do you see us getting into that before we have the discussion with staff, after in the private session this afternoon, or at what point in time will we hear from them to address whatever concerns they have about the inquiry?
I think one proposal I'd make is that we can have a brief exchange to indicate to staff that we intend to submit the questions to the interviewees and are expecting, as we said, verbal responses today. As agreed, written responses can follow sometime later to provide fuller responses. Other than that, I'm not sure what the discussion points would be. If there are additional concerns that staff has in terms of responding to the questions, certainly give them the opportunity to air those concerns. But other than that, just a setting of the table for the day.
My suggestion is slightly different, and that is that we listen to the presentations that they're going to be given. There's quite a lot of information that needs to come through, and some of that may well answer some of the questions. So the issue really is to, by all means, put all the questions to them, but I think what we should be compiling is a list of actual questions at the end that we want the written answers to. It may be that once we've seen the organogram or found out about the existence of a committee or learned about a process, that that question can be taken off the list and that another one might be added to it. So I'd treat those questions as living for us to edit and then submit at the end. And I don't think there's any problem from staff with that kind of approach. They're quite happy to give full written responses to a list of questions provided there's sufficient time.
Just to totally support what Peter's just proposing, I think it will in fact be if we keep a listing of action items we'd like to then follow up on or outstanding issues we want to pursue more, and also note those that we believe have been adequately dealt with during the process. That might be the best way.
I do think, though, that Larry's point about the sort of set of larger issues should be addressed, and I think that it would be useful to begin our conversation with the staff by saying we want to have a conversation and a dialogue, that this wasn't meant to be a cross-examination, and that we understand in conversations, you don't come back and cross-examine people on the basis of a conversation. And I think it is worth putting that on the record and providing our assurances of good faith to the staff.
A practical consideration. In the morning, we shall be listening to the presentation of the staff in answering our questions. So the idea is that we just sit and listen. And then we ask questions, we repeat, so to speak, the exercise in the afternoon with questions coming freely from the group. That's the arrangement.
Yes, I just have a question related to what Peter said. What we want is, at the end of the day, we want to have a written list of questions, this written list of questions being a subset of the existing list plus some extra questions that are raised today. Is that okay, what you said? Okay.
Willie Curry, I apologize for being late. I got my times and the agenda mixed up. What I wanted to just check in terms of the questions is that this date of the 30th September 2009, what do we do with regard to questions that go before that date? For example, in the 2008 ICANN accountability framework, there's a commitment to have an annual review. Now that would seem to be pertinent to finding out some of the history that takes place before the end of the JPA. So how do we deal with that?
Well, actually, Cheryl and I, in working on our document about performance indicators, took a stab at breaking up the time periods for discussion. We felt a logical breakdown was starting on October 1st, the first day that the affirmation came into force and effect, or the 30th, and through today as being a discrete time period that should be examined in terms of what's been done, what's underway, what's in progress. The prior period we thought that made logical sense would be the full period of the last revised JPA, so going back 3 years prior to September 30th, because there were some very important undertakings with regard to accountability and transparency that are worth examining, one of which you mentioned. And then the third period would be any time before that, but frankly, only for constitutional documents like the bylaws or any other undertaking that was specific to accountability and transparency, but that the review team would probably put much more emphasis on the first two time periods in question. So that's one suggested framing of the time periods. Could we have some discussion on that approach?
Peter here, if I might. That seemed like a very logical approach. The critical area, as you say, is the review since the 1st of October. But the history in that three-year period is important. I think staff are a little bit concerned about getting open-ended sets of requests to look at accounts or things going right back to 2002 or any other period. So I think tying it down, at least again, it can be reviewed if there's some issue that crops up. But your suggestion sounds a very good one.
Discussions.
We would like to spend just a little time about how it started, why this notion of accountability started, for example, in the white paper. It doesn't mean to be very long, but I think it's important to see why this thing, and that's why we prepared something with Willy about accountability and frameworks. So just for a few minutes, I think it would be interesting to go back to the beginning.
Marks. Willie, I think the interesting aspect to your question, and it's probably for Doug first out of the gate, if you will, is that there were some discrete accountability and transparency undertakings in the period prior to the AOC, and those things are still in train, still in process. So that'll be a little bit difficult, I think, for Doug to try to tie all these things together, all these moving pieces, but I think a fairly full examination of those pieces with Doug to begin after the organizational chart might be a good way, and then transition into the affirmation, which has added some new elements, and I think you raise a good point. Any other discussion on this point? Okay. Any other business before we get to 10 o'clock? Yes, please. Open floor. Open floor. Yeah.
Just to considering the agenda, there is a point I don't see in the agenda. Is the question of support we could get for DRT. Is there administrative support or expertise or something like that?
As Olivier and I were making about 85 copies this morning, we were wondering to ourselves, does this team need a secretariat function or some sort of support for, if you look at what's ahead of us, we have a significant amount of data collection and organization inputs. Yes, please.
I need to practice more my English before that. No, it's about the secretary, because if we request some information, how we will check that we receive the information? So who will take care about, yes, the question one is okay, the two, the three, the four, and then retake and said, okay, we list the 12th question. And how mix that with the indicators of the metrics proposal? Because in this request for information, it's not the metrics. And indicators are very necessary to know where is the point, the starting point. So these two questions is about the secretariat and how mix this document with the metrics document that you sent a few days ago.
This is an excellent question. How do we independently verify that the documents or information provided are complete, full, and responsive? So I assume that many of the members of the review team who have been steeped in ICANN's work for years probably have a capacity to do this, but I don't think that should be left entirely to the review team either. So the secretariat must perform that function as well. Seems we're agreeing. Any discussion? So I assume in the budget, were there resources available for this type of a support mechanism?
I don't think there is anything specific, but there's places where it can be found. So that would be a question you might like to put to Doug.
Okay.
I think the more significant question that I've posed a couple of times, both here and elsewhere, is the review team happy to use existing ICANN staff for this purpose? Because there are staff that are available, and we've got some of them in the room. There is the review. As you know, there's a whole series of what we call the bylaw reviews as the individual organs get reviewed. And so there's a team that's used to doing this kind of work, and that staff would be available. My suggestion, wearing my multiple hats, is that that would be helpful because you've got people who understand all the acronyms, know the phone numbers, and you know, but they come with that knowledge. That brings with it, you know, the inevitable baggage that they are, you know, again, part of the ICANN organization that's being reviewed. So I think that's a decision for the team, whether the advantages of their familiarity outweigh the issues about independence.
I would be in favor for a solution of this type, because I think it would be difficult to find an external secretary unless a person or two could be put at the disposal of the group by another organization, but that would also create problems. At the end of the day, this person would have to do just secretarial work under the instructions of the chair and the vice chair. So I think they play the role, that they give us the guarantee that any possible capture due to the fact that the personnel doing the secretariat comes from ICANN does not take place.
would be happy to play that role, but let me state first, and I hope this is taken in the right spirit, because already I feel there's been some subtext of perhaps concern or distrust by the staff as to what we're after, and it's not meant in that way at all. I think any type of exercise of this nature requires a validating factor, a veracity test, if you will, that the information provided is complete, it's accurate, it's responsive. And while I'm happy to play that role, I couldn't pretend to say that I am the librarian of all processes and documentation that is ICANN historically, and I could not guarantee 100% that I would be able to verify the veracity.
Just a point. I think part of the advantage we have is the makeup of the team itself. We come from a very diverse but nevertheless focused and with degrees of history world of ICANN. We actually bring a whole lot of our own knowledge or access to knowledge and history, which our role should be bringing to the table in terms of some of this due diligence as well. And I have people in my community who are the librarians of everything that was ever said or not said. Quite literally, I think we can access the accuracy by interacting with community as well. I can't imagine my lot will be too quiet if we get it wrong.
Submit a nomination for you, Cheryl. Any other discussion?
I think we're talking about two things. One is putting everything we receive in its right place, or what it answers exactly, and this is pure secretarial work, and evaluating the accuracy and if something is missing and things that has to do with the substance. And this is another thing, so just...
Yeah, I agree with Manal, I think. If you have them doing veracity testing, anything beyond the type of work that we've seen Alice or Marco do in facilitating some of these discussions, I think you have to have a dividing line between those two.
If I may, I see that as our work. If not, I don't know why I'm here.
Yes, please, Willie.
Could I just check, so would this be a dedicated function to the review team from the staff, or would they have other duties that they would be carrying on with in addition to this?
My guess is that it would be someone seconded from other duties who would continue doing those other duties. I don't see this as being a full-time role, and so it would be some job sharing. Recognize that there are eventually going to be four of these review teams up and running probably at the same time, so they may end up doing other reviews, but they'll still be doing other things.
Okay, there's some sidebar discussion about perhaps hiring Sherry from this GNSO. But again, let's focus on the two functions. One is really just document data collection and organization on the one hand, which I think an ICANN staff person could probably dispatch fairly well for us. And then the other is the verification and the check for completeness and responsiveness. If Sherry could play that role, then that's something we should discuss. If she'd be more of the organizational function, then I think the staff might satisfy that.
I completely agree that on the administrative tasks, there's no reason to go beyond the group. But I do think that there is a line that we need to carefully tread. And I also agree it's probably not a full-time job. So the notion of having some independent, slightly more than just administrative secretariat, but somebody who's going to make sure that things get where they're get arrive when they're supposed to arrive and that kind of stuff, and I think would be useful.
If I may just take a quick sense of the room, we have two approaches. The chair and the vice chair could act primarily as the keepers of the verification function, and if that were the model, I can tell you that we would lean very heavily on members of the review team to back us up in that function. Or we can outsource that function to a third party, and that would involve getting the right person It would involve some budget. Those are the two choices that are before us. Discussion, and let's move toward a resolution.
No.
I think we have sort of substantive part of the work, checking the quality of the answers, the documents that we receive. That is a task for the whole, for the group as a whole. Each one of us should be reading all the documents. Now, what you need is somebody who will be chasing the answers, somebody who will be asking the group, have you replied by that date, that will be posting the document on certain parts. This is essentially a secretarial task, and I think somebody from ICANN doing also something else on the side, depending on the demands, it's more than enough. Now, whether we need somebody externally to do a particular task at a particular point, maybe I would not rule that out, but for the time being, I don't see that as a major issue. So I think you need secretarial support. It can come from ICANN. The rest is a common responsibility of the group.
Any other discussion?
Wondering just in terms of what Becky was saying, whether we're not looking at three dimensions. I mean, the one is the role that Brian's indicated for the chair and vice chair to act as a kind of source of veracity check with the support of the team. Then there's the straight or librarian function of the secretarial role, and I would see in between that a kind of, if I understood what Becky was saying, a kind of slightly slightly less administrative, less secretarial role, more at the level of coordination. So that, for example, if we need to organize specific events around public hearings on the first inputs that we're wanting to receive, that we have someone who could facilitate that rather than that being completely on the shoulders of the chair and vice chair. Almost like a coordinator function.
Thank you. I think what we might be trying to do is build something a little bit too complicated without necessarily having the needs analysis done. And I think we have got the ability to, as we can bring in other expertise, we can bring in other assistance at needful times when we decide this needs to be done. So for your particular point, when that happens, we just get someone to do that. If we believe there is a validation or an audit exercise that needs to be done, we just get someone to do that. But to build the multi-story model now, I'm not sure is really as necessary as just getting on with the job.
Okay, my sense in the Warren?
That was just a scratch, but I mean, to be honest, how official do we want to make
this secretariat? I mean, we've been relying on Marco and Alice to help us with some of these organizational administrative things without sort of officially creating a secretariat. I'd be more interested in sort of the ad hoc use of them as opposed to, you know, creating these additional official bodies to support this exercise.
That's a good point. The only thing consideration there, I think, is if we look forward to the follow-on review teams, that we have to keep in mind we're going to be something of a model. So however we structure our work, the follow-on review teams are going to look to us as to what we did and whether it worked. That's the only other consideration in response to your question. I'm more inclined to just get on with it and take the task on as a team, and if we begin to fall down, we can always outsource the veracity check function. And I'm sensing that might be the consensus of the table. Is that correct? Manal?
Yes, I do agree to that approach. I just want to stress that this verification is going to be a whole team thing. I don't think.
I don't think we're going to have a problem there. Okay, so it's agreed among the team that we will proceed, we will check with staff for someone to be seconded to help with the collection and organization of data and information, and that the chair and the vice chair will take on the role of being veracity czars with strong support from the members of the review team. Is this agreed?
Do I need to make a motion?
Okay.
A related question to about experts, because they were at the mention of experts since the constitution of the review team, and there are two blank lines. And so I was wondering if there was some budget possibilities on external experts.
That's a question for Doug, I think. I'm pretty sure there's budget available. I don't think there's specific line item called experts for review teams, but I'm pretty sure there's funding available. So you can put that question to Doug. I think that's something that we've got to keep in mind when we look at the work. And Larry had quite a comprehensive view, I think, of the kind of expertise that we'd be contracting in to do things. I think we really need to get that discussion so that we can get some plan, and that'll lead to budget.
Cheryl.
If I may, just picking up on Peter's point on budget, some of the ramifications of the decisions we make, we must keep a very, very close eye on what the community view and reaction to this is, because if we're going to spend 1.2 million in an exercise which is very valid, it's got to come from somewhere, and we then have to realise the community may have opinion on exactly from whence that comes and what that is not being done while that's being done. So we need to just not decide what is or is not the right thing, but every time we make a decision, look at the bigger picture. Because as I understand it, and again, we do need to hear from Doug, there certainly wasn't a particularly large budget allocated to this review team. So we can either keep within budget and therefore possibly not meet all our needs as well, or realise when we go without beyond the planned and provisional budget, because this is a model, this is a first time, we hadn't tested the waters, we didn't know what requirements were going to be needed to put in. Just make sure that we know that there are financial constraints and that we need to justify and explain why we make choices and why it's for the greater good when we do.
Very good. And I think we can take this conversation up in more depth, certainly this afternoon or tomorrow when we get into the nuts and bolts of our work. Would love to have a brief coffee break before we get started at 10. Any other business? Okay, with that, let's close until 10 and reopen with the staff. Thank you.